Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Well, hello, everybody, and Happy New Year. It's great to be back. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ann Baldwin. I am the president of Baldwin Media Marketing, and
I am Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, the CEO from The Connection.
Well, it's great to be back in the studio again, Lisa, and talking about great things. We've just got, you know, so many things, and we've gotten so much feedback from this program, too, that people really do appreciate the advice and the services and all the information that we passed along. So today I decided, I wish you could see him, but you can't, because I always say this, and I'm maybe being inappropriate, but we've got, like, the cutest PIO in the universe on the program today.
Where?
And
where?
Right here.
It's you.
And you've already guessed it. It's Deputy Chief Brian Foley with the Hartford Police Department. And, Brian, we thought it would be great to have you on just because, you know, to talk about with The Connection and all their services and the opioid crisis, you know, what's going on in our inner cities. And, you know, I know that day in and day out, people are out there fighting the fight, but are we winning the battle? I mean, I guess is the big question.
First of all, I can name like 10 other cuter PIOs than me. That's for
really?
Sure. Right off.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty much name any PIO.
Oh, they're all cute.
Yeah, that's one of the prerequisites.
No, thanks for having me on this morning, though. Thanks for having me on, but it's a huge issue, not just for the city of Hartford, but the entire state and the entire country now. And things are really changing rapidly in the drug market and the things we're seeing on the streets of Hartford.
How are they changing? I mean, I know that from what I've seen and from what I've read, you know, the opioids themselves have taken on, you know, a whole new life. You know, people are concocting these things now that are deadly. Even with Narcan, sometimes people aren't responding. So is it that activity?
That's exactly it. So what we're seeing now is, all right, so probably what I was in here last year, we talked about fentanyl being found in the, yeah, mixed in with the heroin and how deadly fentanyl was when it's mixed in with heroin. We got to a point where we were looking out as police officers, looking out and being extra careful in case we stumbled upon fentanyl during our drug raids and our heroin operations. It's to the point now where we're seeing heroin fentanyl take over for heroin. So fentanyl is now the drug that people are just using straight.
Wow.
And the reasons for this are pretty simple. It is so much cheaper to make, produce, and get fentanyl into the United States than it is heroin. So you're looking at about a third of a cost. So on average, a bag of fentanyl sold on the street is about $1.30 or so, and heroin can be about two or three times that. So it's cheaper. It's more deadly. It's easier to get in here in its purest form. This, a package of fentanyl that can get 100,000 hits out of it, is very small, the size of a business envelope full of powder, and that's easy to get into the country, easy to smuggle, and incredibly dangerous. So we're seeing fentanyl take over for heroin, and to the point now where we expect fentanyl every day in our search warrants and arrest warrants. Gee, last night we our officers had a bunch of hits. Every week we're doing search warrants where we're actually finding pure fentanyl. Fentanyl mixed in with bags, it creates a problem for our officers, a safety problem. Obviously, we've trained for it and studied, as have all officers in the region now, on how to respond.
I have a question. So with the safety guards that you're putting in, can you share a little bit about sort of what those are? Because I have the same concern.
Sure.
For the staff, our staff in my agency, who are, you know, we have overdoses, etc. And
yep,
it's, I'm really, really concerned.
Well, right off the bat, we didn't want to wait around for any policies or the legal aspects of it. We got fentanyl into the hands, I'm sorry, we got Narcan into the hands of our detectives.
Yes, we have that too.
That,
yeah,
are handling the fentanyl. Then we use skin protection, you know, gloves,
yeah,
and breathing apparatus as well, that obviously helps protect our detectives. We plan for it, what happens if there is an exposure. Now, some of the things police department does on entry into an apartment building. All right, let's say we know there's drugs in this apartment building and we have officers and we're gonna hit it. There's some dangers involved. And so as an officer, when you're going in, do you want to limit your breathing and your eye, your visibility, because you're wearing a face mask to protect yourself from fentanyl? So those are from fentanyl. So those are some of the dangers that they face and the questions that they do. So now I'm gonna limit my scope of vision for bad guys with guns because I have a face mask on to protect my breathing of fentanyl that's in the air. Now, as they enter, let's say they breach a door really hard and it smashes against where the drugs are. Now that the drugs can come atomized, we use a device called a flashbang. You throw it through a window and it creates a massive loud explosion that stuns everybody in the apartment building. That gives our officers 5 or 10 seconds to get in and get us safely established before anyone knows what's going on. That explosion atomizes the fentanyl. Mm-hmm. We sent 12 of our SWAT team members to the hospital last year as a result of that exact situation. So it's a danger for our detectives. We have we have Narcan available for our dogs, our canines that work with
our detectives. Wow, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, we came. We had some people come in and train our detectives on how to use it for the dogs. I mean, these dogs are sticking their faces right in.
Oh my God!
Getting paid to find it with their noses. So you can imagine the dangers. And there has been overdoses of dogs due to smelling the fentanyl or the heroin, and Narcan has saved them. We haven't had to have it here in Hartford, but we are certainly all prepared for it.
Wow.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Deputy Chief Brian Foley from the Hartford Police Department, Ann Baldwin and Lisa DeMattis-Lapore. So it's an airborne thing. It's an airborne drug. It can get in your eyes. It's a powder.
It's a very fine powder, and just like talc or something like that. And if you hit it the wrong way or if you impact it, it can become airborne. Mm-hmm. It can also get absorbed through your skin. So it's incredibly potent, dangerous, and
dangerous.
You know, it's replaced heroin now.
Yeah. And it's addictive, I'm assuming.
Oh, you know, it's just like every other opioid,
right.
Only much, much more potent and just as or more addictive than anything
You know,
else.
I go back to my rehab days, and I remember one of the guys in the group was talking about heroin and the first time that he ever did it, and he shared that he said, I said to the dealer, you know, how long is this going to last, meaning the effects, because I got to be home for dinner. And the dealer said, for the rest of your life. You know, so that's what we're dealing with. One time, you know, you think about, you know, these other gateway drugs, and you get to the point where people still need the high, and they want it cheaper and they want it faster, and this is it. And it can be manufactured, right?
Yep.
You don't have to grow it.
Correct.
You can just manufacture it. So, and Lisa, you must see people come in with this kind of problem all the time.
On a daily basis.
And how are you dealing with it? How do you deal with an addiction like this?
Oh, it's just so hard. You know, folks right now are, you know, it's so rampant and it's so horrific right now. You know, our staff are walking around with Narcan around their neck, right? And, you know, we have precautions like you're saying, because we have to go through, you know, people's bags and, you know, make sure that they're not bringing things in. But you know how that works, right? They still could. And we have, you know, folks that are, you know, on Suboxone right now and, you know, trying to get through treatment and trying to get through recovery, but it's just really hard. I don't have the answer, Ann. I wish I did. Day by day, you know, we're seeing this epidemic, and we're really, it's like back, it makes me think of back in the 80s when I first started working in the field, and there was that the heroin epidemic. We're back again. This is worse.
You know, and it's not just here. It's not just in Hartford.
No.
It's all over the country.
It's all over the country.
It's all over the country. And so, you know, what are the solutions? I mean, what are you doing on the streets? And is there an answer, or is it going to get better? I mean, is there any hope?
Well, so let's say 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when I was working in Frog Hollow, the epicenter of heroin here in Connecticut, we started to do drug operations, and we started to see the increase of people buying drugs. And every time you talk to somebody, you know, well, how do you'd have a moment of clarity with them when you sit them down and they're, you know, they're getting ready to go to jail, and you talk to them and, you know, how did this happen to you? And you know, you see that human being and that soul.
Exactly.
And they reveal, you know, 95 times out of 100, it was pills. It started with pills. Mm-hmm. Now one person would say it's from an
injury,
accident.
Right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Or a hospital. Another person was at a, you know, college party and they were popping pills, you know.
Right.
It didn't matter how, but it all started with pills. you're looking at 10 years to get out. It takes, you know, it took 10 years to get into it for that real painkiller surge through the medical community, which started all this.
Yeah.
You're looking at another 10 years of legislation just to get out of it. So in the meantime, treatment, and education and
exactly.
awareness. We're starting a program for diversion. And so let's say we arrest a prostitute who's just absolutely strung out on heroin or opioids. What's the worst thing we can do to her? It's probably put her in jail.
Right.
And you know, now you're looking at a failure to appear down the road, because as soon as she gets out, she's not going to be held.
Right.
As soon as she gets out, she's not going to go to court. She's, you know, she's strung out on that next hit. So we're going to, instead of arresting these people and building up their criminal record and making their lives worse, we're going to give them the opportunity to go right into treatment. And this is
exactly.
through the Department of Mental Health and Addiction
yeah.
Services in the state of Connecticut.
And those are programs that we have, and that's exactly what we're doing. So we're seeing people that are coming out. We're actually excited because we looks like we're going to be opening a women's program for women coming right out of prison, which is really exciting because don't get me started. That's sort of my heart of, you know, the lack of especially female beds in Connecticut. And again, that's what we've been doing all these years is education, right?
Yep.
Counseling, going back to the root of how this all started with the person and trying to, you know, work these things out. It's like peeling an onion. And these stories are all horrific.
You know, and the Connection works very closely with a lot of their programs with the Department of Corrections.
Yep.
And we've had the commissioner in here. And, you know, he said, that isn't the answer. Incarceration isn't the answer. We've also had people on this program that were in jail for other offenses and saw those people trying to detox, you know, throwing up violently and all kinds of other things. And, you know, and they don't really care about that, do they? They're going to throw you behind the bars and, you know, detoxing. I can't imagine. I know what it is from alcohol, but I can't even imagine, you know, what some of the side effects are. And frankly, it can be deadly if you just throw somebody out there to detox all by themselves. It should be medically assisted, I think.
Commissioner Semple from the Department of Corrections is actually working with us on our diversion program.
Great.
As a state, we're lucky to have a guy that's
so
fantastic. Nuanced in regards to
You're
addiction
right.
and addiction treatment mm-hmm. In our prison system. And he does a fantastic job. He's an absolute close partner with the Hartford Police Department with us. I consider him a friend. And they're taking incredibly nuanced or new steps to look at the other side of things and how we've done it in the past, and now let's look at the other side and how things, you know, haven't worked and what we can do to make things better.
You know, he is really amazing. He's very bright and very committed, and he's really taking this on full storm in Connecticut. We're really lucky to have someone like him.
He gets it.
He does.
And you know, let's talk about the stereotype and let's talk about the demographic of these people that are getting into this opioid you know, addiction mess. You know, it's not, you talked about Frog Hollow, but it's not just in Frog Hollow.
No.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's in the suburbs. It's everywhere.
So,
right?
So in the suburbs, it's, you know, where I live, you know, people talk about, you know, Hartford. And I've actually heard people in law enforcement, their cops say, well, you know, all the heroin's coming from Hartford, so that's where all the heroin's coming, Hartford. And I'm like, wow, that's weird. I've, you know, been there 23 years. I've never seen a poppy field in there. I've never seen a heroin factory in there. So it's coming from somewhere, yeah, but it's not coming from Hartford. It's ending up where poverty is, and that's where it's being sold, and people are coming in. There's people in the city that buy it just as much as outside,
absolutely.
And I want to give that that misconception. Mm-hmm. People love to say that, but it is absolutely affecting the entire state,
every single town.
Yep.
Right. And you know, and like I said, you know, you see now people are being more bold even with, you know, these young people. And you read these obituaries.
Yep.
And you read that they died of an overdose because the parents want to know that, look at this face. Look at my young son or daughter. And this is why they're not here anymore, because of this particular issue. So what do you recommend for people, Brian? You know, you talked a little bit about programs and accessing programs, but I know, you know, in my addiction, my head was so screwed up, I didn't even know how to go about it. So now it sounds like with Department of Corrections, with programs like, you know, at the Connection, that there are resources out there, but somebody has to lead the horse to water.
And you can only do so much. And I've talked about this before, too. It seems like one person in 10 there can get cured from heroin through treatment. So it takes, you know, a lot of times going in and out of treatment before it seems like someone finally does get cured. And it's just such a long and hopeless wait for people to get cured from this. I don't think they ever do get cured per se, but to get themselves completely clean. Again, it's the opioid legislation, I think, that's going to stymie it to start with. And then in the long term, we're never going to get rid of heroin addiction and painkiller addiction, but it's an epidemic now. I mean, our overdoses in the city alone are, you know, 41 or so a year, you know, a few years ago, and we're going to be up over 120 this year. So if people were dying from bullets at that rate, it would be a national outcry as to what's happening. So it's awareness. People should be aware of the problem.
But let me play devil's advocate here a little bit, because legislation, I mean, can we really... Are laws really going to make a difference? You know, legislation as far as what, doctors not writing as many scripts?
Yes,
yeah.
And controls. I've seen controls. But you know what? I've seen firsthand how that's gone to another extreme. And I'll give you an example. I went to my primary care physician. I hate to fly. So back in the days, I'd do like 3 shots of Jack and get on the plane. But because I don't drink anymore and I'm in recovery, that's not an option. So I need Xanax. Okay, just to fly. There, one for there and one for back. My doctor won't even hear about it. I've got to send her my flight information, and then she'll give me 2. One for the trip there and one for the trip back. And I fly a lot. I fly a lot for work. I fly to see my family. What a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I think that kind of thing is kind of necessary. I have to say there's a street value for Xanax. Yeah, we see the Xanax in the pill population. Sure. I know it's a pain. Unfortunately, it's a product of where we are and the product of abuse from before, and now that's where we are now.
I guess this is a true story. It's the same thing for my dog to fly. They will only, seriously, because a person could take those pills. So for my Bocce.
Little Shih Tzu.
My Shih Tzu
thing.
To fly, they will only give me, I had to do the same thing. I had to show them when we were going. I'm not kidding. And all that. And I thought to myself, you know, in a way, I mean, it was a pain in the neck, but good for them. Like, they really wanted to know we were flying, and they only gave me a very minimal amount.
Wow. Your dog takes Xanax.
So my dog had to take Xanax to
fly. It works, man. I'm telling you.
Just to calm him down.
Yeah.
But seriously, it was a really huge thing for the dog. And I thought, well, hey, if this is how people are controlling things across, kudos for them. But it was annoying because it was this whole big thing. They wanted to see. I thought, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and she's the CEO of The Connection, which is a mental health and organization.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter who you are, I guess.
No, but that is a true story. And
I
thought,
believe you.
Well, that's really interesting. I had a conversation over Christmas with my husband's uncle, who is a pediatrician. We got into this whole in Long Island, and he's been in, you know, a pediatrician for years. And we got into this whole conversation about exactly what we're talking about. And, you know, prescribing, you know, drugs. He said to me, I do not prescribe, nor will I prescribe any of these addictive medications to any of my clients. I don't. The kids I see. And he sees them up to 18. He said that we really shouldn't be writing any scripts that is potential for addiction until they're really of an adult age. And then it really has to be time limited and really warranted.
Yep.
He said, I won't do it.
Yep. Everyone that you talk to goes in, just about everyone in their life has gone either to a dentist or in for a minor surgery, and you leave with a big script for a ton of painkillers that you're never going to use.
Yep.
And you know, how hospitals are judged is based on pain tolerance. And so doctors, in order to improve the ratings of their hospitals internally, were issuing large amounts of painkillers to people just to prevent the pain tolerance from coming down. It's preventing those types of laws to stop that, and I believe they've already done that. Mm-hmm. We work closely with Dr. Wolf out of St. Francis, who's just fantastic.
He's the head of the
explains
ER
explains a lot of this
Stephen Wolf.
To us. Yeah, he's great.
He is.
And so they've already taken a lot of measures to slow that down. So everything is really speeding in the right direction. It's just going to take a long time to correct it.
I agree. We're finally seeing a change with our clients. We have women's programs. The women will be, you know, pregnant, etc. They go in, they have a C-section. And when I first started 20 years ago, you know, they would be writing them scripts knowing that they had an addiction problem, knowing that they were going back to residential with their child.
Yep.
And there has been a huge shift in now prescribing something else as opposed to, you know, a pain med or something that's addictive. And if they do, we're supervising it. We, the staff, are getting the script as opposed to handing it to the client when they leave. So there are changes that I'm seeing that is positive, right? But we still have a very long way to go.
Yep.
How has the opioid problem, I mean, why is that a bigger problem than alcohol? You know, and I'm not real knowledgeable about, you know, you've probably seen people under the influence, you both have, of opioids? I mean, what happens to a person?
Well, they're different. I don't want to, someone that's high on heroin is much less problematic than someone that's drunk on alcohol.
Really?
For us. Yeah. The problem with the heroin for us is the violence that's associated with it. Now, back in the 80s, you had the crack epidemic that saw a lot of violence with it, and it never really came with heroin. There was never really a lot of supply and demand as bad as the crack was, where you had the violence. But that's certainly changed, and so many of our homicides are now narcotics related, specifically to heroin fentanyl. And it's the heroin fentanyl dealers. The arrest we had this week with the fentanyl, with the heroin, were an AK-47, an AR-15, and four pistols. We're all in the same arrest warrant that we did. So you're seeing the guns with the heroin and the violence that's associated with it. Not necessarily the person that's high is the problem. Now, how the person that's high is going to feed their addiction, that's a different story. Now, you look out in the suburbs, the burglaries and auto thefts are through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely through the roof. And that larceny, burglary, auto theft situation is hand in hand with heroin addiction. A mm-hmm. Person doesn't have a job, they need to get high, they're going to steal. When they're done stealing from their family, now they go outward. And that's the cycle. And we see a spike in the last three or four years, when the heroin problem really skyrocketed, of not just overdose deaths, but also the larcenies, the auto thefts. Our auto theft recovery in the city, cars from the suburbs brought into the city, is up 140%.
Wow.
In 2 years.
Unbelievable.
So people are stealing cars, bringing them into the city, trading for drugs. Same thing happens with guns. Now, someone will rip off a house in a suburban town, and they'll get into the attic or the basement, and they'll find guns. They bring those into the city, trade them easily for drugs. Now we have the guns on the streets in the city. Same things with states like New Hampshire and Vermont, where the gun laws are lax. They'll buy the guns up there, ship them down here to Hartford, trade it off for bulk heroin. We had a burglary in Ledyard. I believe a dozen guns were stolen in the burglary. Within 45 minutes, all 12 of those guns were sold on the streets of Hartford.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
So that's the problem.
Right.
It's different than alcohol. Alcohol is the fights and the driving.
Right. What does the average opioid addict spend a day on their habit?
Now, that varies. You know, it depends on where they're buying and what they're buying, I guess. Like I said, a bag of fentanyl, if you buy it in bulk, is down just over a dollar. But, you know, the heroin fentanyl in the street, just hand-to-hand, is $3 to $4 a bag, and that's not a whole lot. And you look at people that can get by on you know, 1 to 5 bags a day, and then as the problem gets worse, 5 to 10, and then 10 to 20 bags a day, and, you know, start doing the math on that. That's every single day, and they have to keep paying for that. It really does add up, and now they have to feed that habit somehow.
Right. What are some of the warning signs of somebody, you know, if people are out there listening and not sure if their loved one or someone they know is doing opioids, what are some of the warning signs, if you will?
Well, so there's some of the stealing, the hiding of things, the spoons. You know, you talk about parents who their spoons would start disappearing out of their kitchen cabinet. The spoons used to mix heroin and water, and then it's heated up, and then drawn in the needle, and then used in their arms. So the two things that I say is look for burned spoons or spoons missing from your kitchen cabinet.
How simple.
Yep. And then the black rubber bands that they tie the bundles with. Or the papers that, you know, if you're a parent, educate yourself. Go Google what a bag of heroin looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google what the stuff looks like. They're little tissue or wax-like envelopes. You see those papers around. It would look completely innocuous if you were to walk by on the street and see it on the ground. Those and the black rubber bands that are used to tie a bundle of, you know, 8 bags together at once. Those black rubber bands, you see them lying around in cars or on the floors and bedrooms and such. That's a pretty good indication that there's some good amount of heroin moving in and out.
Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, missing money, you know, money missing, yep. Erratic behavior, lack of taking ADL skills, taking care of yourself, secrets, locking the door, missing school. I mean, there's thousands.
Medicine cabinet cleaned out.
Medicine, that's huge. Medicine, you know, things are missing. Count your pills. I mean, there's so many things. And there, you know, it's this ongoing problem that I think always has been, is people will come in and, you know, they're, my girlfriend was telling me, I had a party, and when I went to use the bathroom, I realized, why is that medicine cabinet like ajar? And she thought, oh my God, these kids are like, right, going through my medicine cabinet. And she just totally freaked out. and she went in there and, you know, there was a pills that were missing. She was so upset. So she's like, what am I going to do? I mean, these are, and again, you're talking about middle to upper class, right? These kids are all going to all go to private school. And she said, what the hell did I do? She called every parent. She was really upset.
Yeah, party's over. I don't blame her. That's
no more.
That's trouble.
Done.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have to think like that. You know, you don't want to be paranoid and you don't want to be judgmental, but you got to be aware that, you know, if you don't have an addiction, someone else might. I mean,
the other thing too was another friend told me she had a party. Same thing. Kids are over. Left a necklace on, expensive necklace in her room. Gone.
Right. Yep, yeah. Theft.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, the good news is that there is help out there too, you know. And,
absolutely.
And I want to give you folks out there listening information. If you're looking for resources, or you or your or someone you know might have an issue, whether it's this, whether it's, you know, all the other things that people face in life, you can go to theconnectioninc.org. TheConnectionInc, all one word, .org. Or they also have a toll-free helpline, and that number is 855-435-7955. Brian, you know, you're out there and you're either there when it happens or you're there after. I mean, you must have seen some horrible things and some lives lost that, you know, maybe didn't have to happen. If someone just would have reached out and said, you know what, I need help, or...
Yeah, the hardest part that you see is, and I can remember some with incredible clarity, some exact moments. So you see overdoses, you see death as a cop in Hartford, and it affects you. But when you see that person that's so close to death, they're still alive and they're using 20 bags a day and they're out there as a prostitute or as a thief, and you know this person's beyond the point of no return, and it's just so sad and you feel so helpless. And those are the cases where we're so excited to get our diversion program going.
That's so great.
You just get them in there and get them in front of something. Just for yourself, that you feel better, that you tried to do something. I remember there was a car parked on Zion Street and it was gutted out and the windows were smashed. And there was a girl, she was probably about 18 or 19. She was living in the back seat of the car. It was early, like on a Sunday morning, like 6:30. And I was checking the car out thinking it was stolen and abandoned there. And I had walked up on it and there was a girl in the back and she woke up. And you could tell she was absolutely beautiful. And she was from out west in 44. I won't just name the town, but... And you could tell that she had parents that had cared for her at one point, and now she's living in this car. She's doing God knows what. I don't even imagine for the money, for her 20 to 30 bags a day that she was doing, and she had the scabs, and it was, you just like, you're like, wow, this is a zombie, and how do I get this girl help?
And did you?
Back then, there weren't a lot of avenues for it. So we're talking, this is probably 2000. It was just horrifying to me to have to walk away from something like that. She's not guilty of anything.
Right.
You know, and what do you do? You know,
what do you do?
It was just sad.
Yeah, it is. It's horrible. But like you said, I mean, the resources, the programs, the education, all the goes with that has gotten better. But, you know, you gotta want it. And I can tell you, as someone in recovery, taking that first step, you've got to want it. And it's not easy.
Yep.
And it can be a painful process to get better. But in the end, it's so worth it.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to tell somebody who's already addicted that things can get better, but they do. I mean, it's either that or death, right?
I know.
It really is. Well, I really, finally, we got about 30 seconds left. Anything else you want to leave our listeners with today, Brian? And I really appreciate your time and your expertise.
No, just keep things going in the right direction. Work with the laws and legislators, trying to encourage them to move things in the right direction. The overdose deaths are skyrocketing in the region, and all the associated problems that come with this. So this is a real problem, one of the worst that we're facing of our generation right now.
And you know, that's the point. It impacts all of us, whether we've got someone who's addicted or not. It's the crime. It's all the other things in society. Let's make society better. Let's all support this, whether it impacts us directly or not. Well, again, Deputy Chief Brian Foley from the Hartford Police Department, thank you for being
here.
Thank
you so much.
It was a great conversation. And Lisa DeMattis-Lapore, this was a very interesting conversation. And
we want to have you back.
Always.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
Really.
Oh, yeah. Very shy, too.
Really cute. And we want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
summer lullaby.